Hello and welcome to ID the Future. I'm Casey Luskin, broadcasting with Discovery Institute's Center for Science and Culture in Seattle, Washington. Today we have on the show with us a special guest, Felipe Aizpun, who is an ID proponent in Spain. Mr. Aizpun has a degree in law and a master in business administration from the University de Navarra in Spain. He's worked in various executive positions in local industries and has been the managing director of a well-known Spanish winery for the last 20 years. Beyond this, however, Mr. Aizpun is quite an expert in the topic of intelligent design. He's devoted more than 30 years to study, research, and writing on different philosophical issues, including economics and political theories, moral philosophy, and the debate over origins. He's written and co-authored other books in this field, including the book Evolucionismo y Conocimiento Racional, which we discussed here on ID the Future a few years ago with Mr. Aizpun, and he's collaborated on the Spanish ID blog DarwinODI.com, where he has written over 200 posts in the past few years. So if you didn't catch that, Mr. Aizpun is one of the most prolific bloggers on intelligent design in the Spanish language. So it's a real pleasure to have you on ID the Future with us today, Mr. Aizpun.
Hello, Casey. It's my pleasure to hear you.
Well, thank you so much for coming on the show with us. Your new book is titled La Quinta Vía y el Diseño Inteligente, which translates into English as The Fifth Way and Intelligent Design. So, Mr. Aizpun, I appreciate all the work that you have done promoting intelligent design in the Spanish language. It's just so important, and I'm glad that we can talk to you today about your new book. So, if you don't mind me, I'd just like to start off by asking you a question. What is your purpose in writing a book like this, comparing classical teleological and philosophical arguments and intelligent design?
You know, the inference of an intelligent cause to explain the observable order in nature or in natural objects has been a constant in the history of human philosophy, but it has not always been presented in the same way. There are two seemingly different traditions that can be identified among theistic philosophers. One is tradition of the what we call the teleological argument, which is presented mainly in the fifth way or the fifth demonstration for the existence of God of St. Thomas Aquinas and the medieval scholastics. And on the other hand, you have the so-called Anglo-Saxon philosophical tradition, which is more familiar with the design argument, an argument which is very much in line with the classical argument already presented by Socrates and other authors in antiquity, and that leads this traditionalist to the contemporary movement of intelligent design. But unfortunately, those two traditions doesn't seem to get along nowadays, mainly because a significant representation of authors belonging to the Thomist tradition attack, sometimes without mercy, the efforts of the intelligent design proponents and represent their arguments as bad science or poor philosophy, or even as erroneous theology. I'm a Catholic myself, and I have been brought up and educated in the tradition of scholastics and Thomism, but at the same time, I have had the chance to become acquainted with the work of the authors of the intelligent design movement. And I'm very certain that both discourses are compatible, but also that they are complementary and they need each other. So I wrote this book to contribute to the understanding and to promoting respect and interest between these two traditions, these two schools.
And Mr. Aizpun, what in your opinion are the main similarities and differences between the two types of arguments, the classical, teleological, and philosophical arguments and intelligent design?
Well, I understand that design and teleology are but two sides of the same coin. I mean, design is such, we understand that something is designed only in relation to the functional capacity of these certain complex structures. And this functionality is the basis of teleology. So at the same time, teleology implies the potential adaptation and response to environmental conditions that allow animate beings to seek his good, especially survival and reproduction. So what we call design in the design argument, and I will cite now what Dr. Behe used to say many times, or he has repeatedly expressed in his writings, design is the purposeful arrangement of parts of a biological system. And this purposeful arrangement of parts means that the parts are oriented to serve the whole to develop its finalist inclination. So I mean that without this sign, there can be no teleology. What I mean is the sheer complexity of an assembly of parts does not imply an intelligent source if we cannot intuitively deduce the close relationship of such complexity with a goal or a purpose for which the arrangement of the parts is oriented. So in short, design and teleology are the two ways of referring to the same detectable characteristic of a natural object. They cannot exist without each other. For instance, you think of a protein that is a chain of amino acids. We infer design in a protein from the fact that this specific chain, and no any other random arrangement of amino acids, is functional and allows the organism as a whole to thrive and prosper.
What, in your opinion, Mr. Ispoon, is the very nature of these kinds of arguments? Is it scientific or philosophical?
I would say it's both scientific and philosophical. So science and philosophy are two stages of the same process. It's the process of acquiring rational knowledge about the real world. So science is the method to acquire knowledge about the physical characteristics of reality, material conditions, properties, and disposition of natural objects. And philosophy is the method to search for answers to the ultimate questions concerning reality, its origin, its causes, meaning, and value of life and existence. So I would say that science provides the material for the philosophical inquiry, so to speak. We observe and we acquire empirical experience and evidence about the material characteristics of the physical world, and then we elaborate on this information through our rational condition. So these kind of arguments had to be necessarily scientific, but at the same time, they must be philosophical. The intelligent design movement emphasizes the scientific part of the argument, especially because it's very much concerned with the scientific character of the main challenge to this type of argument, that is naturalistic evolutionism and Darwinism. Darwinism pretends the emergence of life and complex biological forms could be sufficiently explained in naturalistic terms or by natural causes, and therefore there would be no need for a transcendent intelligent cause at the beginning. Obviously, this is a challenge that has to be addressed in scientific terms, and it must be said that intelligent design proponents, scientists, have done an excellent job in doing that. But at the same time, we need a philosophical approach for the inference from the observable order in nature to the existence of a transcendent intelligent cause. So it's both scientific and philosophical.
Well, that definitely makes sense to me, Mr. Ispoon. And you say in your book that both kinds of arguments have the same logical structure. Could you explain what you mean by that?
Yeah, okay. Following what we have just said, the arguments from the order in nature to the inference of an intelligent cause are always developed in two different and independent steps. The first step is to argue for the existence of objective, real, detectable design or teleology in nature and in natural objects, mainly in living organisms. And this is the scientific part of the argument. This is where the challenge of Darwinist evolutionism has to be addressed to explain that design is true, is real, and is not only an appearance or an illusion. The second step of the argument is a philosophical issue and is concerned with the explanation of why an intelligent cause is required to give account of the existence of this true objective design in natural objects. So the method of reasoning in this this second step is what we call abduction, that is the inference of a cause from the specific characteristic of an observed effect, that is the inference to the best explanation. That applies perfectly to the way in which many intelligent design proponents are presenting these arguments and conclusions. And we can remember now the writings of Stephen Mayer, for instance, which is a perfect example of this kind of reasoning. On the other hand, on the teleological part, or arguments like in the fifth wheel, this tradition, they normally present their arguments as kind of philosophical demonstration, as if it could be presented as a syllogistic deduction achieving apodictic conclusions. I argue in my book that this is not the case and that a rigorous analysis of the text where Aquinas develops his argument from the order in nature, certainly in his famous Fifth Way, but also in other texts that address the same questions, can only be correctly understood as inferences to an intelligent cause that are intuitive, kind of direct illumination or instinctive rational characterization of the nature or essence of things. So I would say that the argument is, in fact, a kind of spontaneous identification of the cause of those observed effects according to the principle of causal adequacy, of the proportionality, that is, what is in the effect must previously be present in the cause.
So what do you mean by objective real design or teleology, and to what extent can intelligent design be proved?
Yeah, okay, this is a key issue in the debate on the origins of the natural world. The question is, if the evident design and teleology observable in living organisms can be presented as an irreducible feature, that means a feature that cannot be explained as the effect or as a manifestation of natural, physical, material processes and causes. What arguments from design or teleological proponents defend is that it cannot, and that natural causes have not the capacity to originate by unguided processes the integrated complexity and the organization of living organisms. Not only that, but also their finalism, their teleological behavior, the mental faculties, values, and so on. This is not something that can be proved like in a philosophical demonstration. What scientific research can do is to show the way in which biological processes take place, the mechanisms involved in those processes, the way in which these processes are oriented toward the ends and goals of the organisms, and so on. For instance, it's remarkable the way in which proponents of intelligent design have shown things like the fact that non-coding DNA is not mainly junk, but clearly functional, the fact that random mutations are mainly deleterious, the existence of clearly directed or oriented mutations to respond to specific challenges or threats in the environment, or the fact that beneficial mutations are almost always result of loss and not accrual of biological information and function, and so on. So thus, adaptive changes that have been scientifically proved to be not something that happens to the cell or to the organism, but something that the organism and the cell experiments by chance, but rather something that the cell does itself. So it's a kind of pre-programmed specific response to concrete threats arising in the environment, and that is teleology all the way down.
So being grounded on the same facts or the same features of natural objects and having the same logical structure, you argue that both arguments reach conclusions that are similar or parallel. Could you elaborate on that argument for us?
Yeah, obviously it's not a surprise that conclusions should be similar, but nevertheless, and this is something that I address in my books, many times, some Thomist authors purport that the conclusions of the intelligent design movement are lame because they can only point to the existence of a kind of cosmic architect, a demiurge, a kind of architect, but not the creator god of religions. Even sometimes also we hear some intelligent design proponents accepting that their conclusions reach only the possibility of an intelligent source, but without qualification. So what I argue in my book is that mainly the conclusion and the kind of intelligent cause that you can infer in both type of arguments are finally the same. And I would like to put an example. I would like to address the people interested in this issue to an interview that you can find in YouTube. This is a wonderful interview to Anthony Flew. Anthony Flew, as you know, was the conspicuous atheist philosopher that at the end of his life converted into a kind of philosophical theism. He has never been a religious person, but he accepted the existence of a transcendent intelligent cause. So in the interview that I mentioned in YouTube, which is titled Anthony Flew on Atheism and God, Flew explains that he changed his mind because of the integrated complexity and the informational govern of the processes of life that he was aware for the advancing the biology in the last decades. And when in this interview he's asked, how does he understand this intelligent cause to be? You know, what are the attributes, his opinion for this intelligent cause? He says many interesting things. He says that it is an intelligence. He says it is a person, is an agent and conscious being. And very important, he says he's a creator. So the relationship between the intelligent cause and the natural world for him is the relation of creation. He also says that he understands this being to be omnipotent, to be omniscient, to be eternal. And even he admits him to be benevolent. He seems to act for an end. There is a purpose in the way he acts. This is important because these are the conclusion of a person that was just thinking in philosophical terms, not a religious. So my conclusion is that both the traditional theological and design arguments reach the same kind of conclusions with the same philosophical and, if you want, with the same theological implications.
Well, thank you so much, Mr. Aspoon. This is very interesting, and I'm really excited about hearing your answer to this final question here, because this is one that has come up a lot in the debate recently, and this has to do with certain Thomist philosophers who are not necessarily favorable towards intelligent design, even though, of course, they are traditional Orthodox Catholic Christians, and you would think that they would be predisposed to be favorable. So how do you explain the resistance, or even in some cases the really aggressive attitude against intelligent design that we see from some Thomist philosophers, and what would you tell them? Why are they opposed to ID, and how would you respond to their arguments?
Well, really, I would say that it doesn't make sense, really, this hostility. Some of them, we must say that not all of them, of course, but some of these Thomist authors present against the ideas or the arguments of the intelligent design movements. I would say that, in fact, both traditions are called to work together and to complement each other. On the one hand, the scholastic, the traditional metaphysics, has many things to offer to the endeavor of fighting against the materialist prevailing view, mainly the philosophy of nature based on the consideration of the four Aristotelian causes. By that, I mean that we have the necessity of explaining reality not only as the modern philosophical view pretends in terms of matter and efficient causes alone, but also in terms of formal and final causes. Design and teleology are concepts absolutely connected with this traditional metaphysics. In fact, it is precisely the fact of departing from these Aristotelian views that has provoked a lot of philosophical erroneous positions today, like materialism, emergentism, or eliminativism, and others. So, on the other hand, I would say also the Thomist camp must understand that a scientific approach is necessary to tackle the issue of teleology, living organisms. Both must listen to each other without prejudice or animosity, a hostility that may be originated in historical differences, but they must respect and work together, especially using the energy and the value of brilliant intellects to sum up efforts against the dominant ontological naturalism. So this is the main purpose of my book.
Well, thank you very much, Mr. Aspoon, for explaining your new book. The title, again, is La Quinta Vía y el Diseño Inteligente, which translates as The Fifth Way in Intelligent Design. This is not Mr. Aspoon's first book on intelligent design. As we mentioned earlier, he also wrote Evolucionismo y Conocimiento Racional, which was published a couple years ago, and we had him on the podcast talking about that. But what I really want to commend our ID the Future listeners to go check out is Mr. Aspoon's website and Spanish ID blog. The website there is darwinodi.com. That's darwinodi.com. And it's a wonderful website if you're looking for resources on intelligent design in Spanish. Mr. Aspoon has written over 200 blog posts in the past few years there on this topic. So thank you for your prolific writing and your great work on this topic, Felipe Aspoon.
Thank you very much to you, Casey.
Well, I'm Casey Luskin with ID the Future. Thanks for listening.
This program was recorded by Discovery Institute Center for Science and Culture. ID the Future is copyright Discovery Institute 2015. For more information, visit www.intelligentdesign.org or www.idthefuture.com.